Hey everyone, welcome back to the Daily Gold Podcast. Today we're speaking with Mickey Fulp. He's known as a mercenary geologist. You can find his work at mercenarygeologist.com or goldgeologist.com. Hey Mickey, thanks for coming on. How are you doing today?
I'm doing well. Thanks for having me once again, Jordan.
Well, Mickey, the reason I wanted to have you is because some of the things that you've been talking about, we're starting to see that play out in the markets. Uranium in particular, I know we just had the PDAC conference, and I know we bumped into each other and you were running around because everybody wanted to talk to you about uranium. So let's talk about that later. I know that you don't want to regurgitate everything you've already said for the 20th time, but why don't we start with copper, because that's something you've been talking about, and today copper was down 4%. Can you tell us what happened there and why?
Yeah, it was a really interesting market, copper market today. I did a little preparation work yesterday, and all I could say was copper's been flat and range-bound for, geez, how many months now, between 320 and 340. It's been very exciting. In the meantime, inventories during this time period, well, inventories are down well over 50% year over year. It's just quite amazing. And warehouse inventories are essentially surplus copper. But the copper market, despite the slowing down in China, has demand has remained strong, and the supply-demand balance has teetered on the totter for quite some time. It flips from one side to the other, generally on what kind of disruptions we have with accidents and weather and landslides into open pit mines and strikes, et cetera. But today it took a 4% hit, as you alluded to. And the real reason for that, it went down significantly. It went from 321 to 309 as it trickled down, starting in Asia markets. And there was a Chinese private solar energy company, Shanghai Solar Energy, Shanghai and something solar energy, and it defaulted on its bonds yesterday. So that is a real concern. I've been looking at Chinese private corporate debt for some time, and there's about $2 trillion out there, and so this could become endemic, and it is of quite concern with the financial markets, and of course it would most directly affect Dr. Copper, PhD in economics.
And just to follow up on that, I'm looking at the Shanghai Stock Exchange. That was basically flat for the day. I mean, do you think that's a little overreaction there as far as copper? I mean, maybe I haven't been following the COT there, but maybe a lot of speculators just use this as an excuse to dump positions.
I think that's probably true, that it is likely an overreaction. And thanks for the information, because I had not checked the Shanghai Exchange today. But, certainly the copper market is one of the most speculative in the world, and it can have volatile moves at times, depending on positions long or short of major traders. So we would hope so. A 309 copper price does not feel nearly so healthy as a $3.30 copper price, which we have seen in the not too distant past. So this will be an interesting market to watch going forward. I found it curious somewhat that it was a solar energy company that defaulted on its bonds, and I think that just reiterates in my mind my prejudices against government-subsidized solar energy. You know, we've seen similar failures, although not default on bonds, but certainly failed companies in bankruptcy on major solar companies that were bankrolled by Obama's subsidies and the government stimulation to make alternative energies succeed.
Mickey, let's go from there and talk about some other metals and ones that don't ordinarily get a lot of coverage. platinum and palladium. I mean, looking at palladium just from a technical perspective, that thing has been in a, if you look at a, you know, 5 or 10 year chart, that thing has been in a tight consolidation, a nice range since it peaked in early 2011. And it looks pretty close to retesting its highs. You know, platinum looks like it's also bottomed. What do you have to say about these metals?
Well, these are what I would refer to as bipolar metals. They are really industrial metals for the main parts of their demand, but they also function as precious metals to some degree. Certainly palladium, I'm looking at about a 5-year chart right now, and it's just been completely range-bound, a jagged chart here for the last couple of years, and the supply-demand fundamentals are quite compelling. It is the most important metal used in gasoline engine catalytic converters. We have seen the auto industry in the U.S. and China both ramping up over the last couple of years and looking very healthy, and that increases the demand for palladium. Jewelry demand, especially in China, is robust because it's a much cheaper alternative for the burgeoning middle class in China versus gold and platinum for jewelry. Combine that with South African mining strikes going on right now. And then you kind of have a wild card here, and that's Russia. Norilsk, the integrated precious metal and nickel and copper producer in the Kola Peninsula of Russia, supplies something on the order, off the top of my head, about 35 to 40% of the world's palladium. And with this Ukraine story ongoing and sanctions threatened by the U.S. against Russia, this could send the palladium market higher, I think.
Okay, now moving away from metals, let's talk about stocks a little bit. The TSX Venture, that thing has just been on fire the last couple months, and the technical action there has been really beautiful, I have to say, being a technician myself. Mickey, I know that this is kind of a proxy that we like to use for the junior sector. I know there's some non-commodity companies in that index, but nonetheless, what is carrying this index forward? Is there a particular group, or is it just the strength in the junior sector in general?
Well, I don't think this is a broad-based rally. I think it's the cream of the crop of junior resource companies post mid-December tax loss selling. We have seen the good juniors rebound, and I think it became an issue of getting the tax loss selling over, and then these things are very much oversold, and they've rallied because of it. So I'm looking at a couple of months to 3-month chart on the venture, and it's just been on a roll. We had until about the third or fourth week of January, we had a big roll, and then it corrected a bit, and we're now at an 11-month high. It looks like if a week can be looked as a foreshadowing, we have not seen the common post-PDAC hangover that we commonly do. In fact, the venture exchange was up all this week. I think maybe it took a little break yesterday, but it closed the day at 10:43, which is still less than its 52-week high, but we haven't seen these levels since mid-April of 2013. What's concerning me, perhaps, is this is not a industry-wide rally. We still see volumes on the venture exchange only probably averaging 80 million shares a day, as opposed to the boom days when we were well over 200 million shares a day. Let's hope for some more liquidity. Certainly, the good juniors are able to raise money this year, and last year they couldn't do that.
So, Mickey, I mean, a lot of people, I believe, including yourself, have been saying that you know, there's too many juniors out there. There's some that need to go away. But, I mean, aren't we already seeing, as you said, kind of the cream of the crop are rising to the top? I mean, it just seems like a lot of those companies, if they're not doing anything at this point and they can't raise money, I mean, aren't they just going to go away? And, I mean, isn't that not really going to have that big of an impact on this market?
Well, I guess the problem that we see is we sat here a year ago, and a year ago at PDAC, John Kaiser and I appeared on BNN, and John, who's been the big, the guy who keeps all the statistics and points these non-viable juniors out and gives us the data on that so succinctly, you know, we would have thought that this washout would have been well into effect now. We haven't seen that many companies that have gone away. We've seen the stock exchange keep throwing them lifelines by reducing the requirements for financing. For a while, you could do a half a cent financing. I saw 40 million shares at a half a cent to raise $200,000. I saw 700 mil or 70 million shares to raise $350,000. And I don't think those sorts of things are good for the business because those are non-viable companies. Eric Coffin pointed out in an interview during PDAC that that the doomsday is coming for a bunch of these juniors because they have audit fees and to pay for year-end 2013. That's looming. And if there's one thing that you cannot pay on credit, you have to buck up, and that's you got to pay the auditors. So hopefully in the next couple of months we'll see a bunch of them wash out. But certainly survival of the fittest. But until we wash a bunch of them out, I think the average retail investor is still confused by all the plethora of companies and these small little financings, and oftentimes just to keep the lights on and the wolves at bay.
Right. And you know, speaking of PDAC, before we get to uranium, I just want to get your thoughts on the PDAC. As we said when we introed, you were very busy. What was the vibe there? Can you just share any stories or anything that you think our listeners would like to take from that?
Yeah, it was I think a 5,000 to 6,000 people fewer, but there was still, if that's correct, well over 25,000 people there. I think the number of companies was down well over 10%. The number of companies, maybe even 20%, exhibiting. I felt like it was a bit of a breath of fresh air. You could actually wander the hall and make your way down the aisles in a progressive fashion. Last couple of years, it just seemed to be too much. The mood itself was, we've heard this time and time again, for lack of a better word, in fact, I think you wrote about this yesterday, cautiously optimistic. And I turned that around. I was trying to say hopefully optimistic. but it does look better. I did not find the mood and the buzz to be as boisterous as we did at Cambridge House in January. But the, you know, we're 2 months into this, 2.5 months into this rally now, and all the business is still overall in a world of hurt. We're encouraged that, I mean, wouldn't it be fine, Jordan, if this bear market only lasted 3 years? You know, the last big one I was involved with lasted nearly 6 years post-BREX. So I would welcome the fact then we can all go back, or certainly I can, and say this was just a bear market correction, a dip within an overall 20 to 30 year secular bull market for commodities. And certainly I'm still a proponent of that idea. We all are just ready for the bear market to be over. And of course, during this time, we've had lots of buying opportunities, and we hope that we made the right choices.
Just to follow up on that, it's kind of interesting, I guess, the way some people talk about the sector, because I'm sure you heard Rick Rule's comments about saying, you know, or we need issuer capitulation. But I mean, as you know, I mean, it's as you said, I mean, the cream of the crop, a lot of the stocks that, I cover and I've been following, I mean, on average, most of them are up 100% from their lows in late June. That was when the Toronto venture bottomed. I mean, the venture yes. is not up 100%, but it just seems like the quality out there has already appreciated. I mean, when something advances that much, and I'm not talking about stocks that have gone from 3 cents to 15 cents, that doesn't really influence the broader market, but juniors that have gone from maybe 50 cents to $1.20 or $1 to yes. $3, it seems like there's a little bit of a bifurcation, because you have the ones that can't, that are just spending money to keep the lights on, and then it seems like the quality have already done well. I mean, I don't know if there's a question in there, but I feel like it's confusing to some people, because some people talk about a recovery and they're talking about, the cream of the crop, as you said, and then other people are talking about, the bottom of the sector that are just raising money to keep the lights on.
Well, yes, and I welcome this rally in the cream of the crop, and I am an outspoken advocate of the bottom half of this business going away, and we kind of start all over. I don't know how successful the washout will be in eliminating a bunch of these companies. But you're right, Jordan. It just does feel better. We're seeing a silver lining in all these clouds. And like you say, I mean, I've had my latest two picks, stock picks, or let me rephrase that. Two of my latest three stock picks, my third only came out a week ago, and it's up. But I've picked three stocks since right around the end of 2013, and two of those have gotten their doubles respectively in 9 weeks, and one of them is approaching a triple now in 5 weeks. So we see this. Good stocks are starting to reward their shareholders, and damnation, that just feels good, doesn't it?
Yeah, well, let's before I let you go, let me get a few thoughts on uranium, because first, I'll tell our audience that you've been speaking about this nonstop for the last week. So if we don't cover it that much in depth here, you can hear the other interviews on Mickey's website. But Mickey, I've had you on in the last few years, and you've been a big uranium bull. And now, we've had a big breakout there. A lot of the uranium juniors, I think, have even performed better than gold and silver juniors. What's going on there? Is there a fundamental underpinning for that, or is it a technical breakout? I mean, what do you think the reason is for that? And can you share any companies that you're following or you own at this point?
Sure. I think what it really is, it's stocks, equities, especially U.S. uranium producers, and I haven't really looked at the Canadian companies, the producers. I don't really follow those. I prefer the U.S. plays, but they're front running the idea that that we're going to have a better uranium price. The market is very primed for that. There is no fundamental cause in the short term other than the idea that we're going to have some Japanese restarts, and the psychology of the market's ready for that. These uranium companies got beaten up so badly that they became compelling buys, and we've been very successful In that regard, we picked Energy Fuels on December 27th at 5:61. It closed today at 11:34 U.S. Actually, off 32 cents, but we got our double in that one very quickly. It has compelling economics, and especially with a rising, highly leveraged to uranium price. And then our second pick was last Friday, and we haven't released that to the website yet, but it's available to all free email subscribers. All you have to do to get that pick is go sign up with a name and an email address, and you're given access immediately. That's another uranium producer, and it's up this week significantly. So no real compelling fundamental reason, but the fact that that they get so overbought, or excuse me, oversold, that they become buying opportunities. And of course, I am a strong proponent for a higher uranium price in the mid to long term.
So, with respect to uranium, that is your top, your favorite commodity, or top sector to invest in at that point? Or, I mean, at this point?
Yes, it is. And people need to realize that, or should realize that, I'm a contrarian. So I go in and I try to pick up stuff that's at the bottom of the market. And I've been talking uranium pretty hard here for about 6 months, and I usually am ahead of the head of whatever's going to happen. I mentioned Energy Fuels. I need to throw in my disclaimer that they sponsor my website. They pay to do that. And I'm a long-term shareholder through the predecessor acquisition, which was Strathmore Minerals. So I'm financially biased, but we have rewarded our subscribers with that. And although I expect Energy Fuels to do a bit of a correction with profit taking at some point, maybe we saw that today. The long term fundamentals, I think, support even a much higher stock price on that company.
Okay, Mickey. Now, as we close, can you let our listeners know how they can sign up for your free email list so they can get your newsletter and all these picks?
Yep. You can get all my stuff for free on my website. Everything I do is free, but the stock picks are restricted to free email subscribers, and you'll get them the minute they're hot off the press. And you can do that by going to the website, mercenarygeologist.com. On the left side underneath my mugshot, it'll say click here to become a free subscriber. You can always get a bunch of information. We are very busy on Twitter at Mercenary Geo with almost 35,000 followers right now. And we keep that light, and we cover a lot of things and a lot of my even political views and my sports teams and my stock picks and anything that's of interest to us. So I encourage people to do that too.
All right, Mickey, well, on that note, thanks so much for taking time out of your very busy week to speak with us. I and my listeners, we really appreciate it.
Well, thanks a lot, Jordan, and we are strong supporters of you, and we will post this interview with full credit to you on our website, and I look forward to that.